Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. Blog Talk's having issues today again, so I apologize. I just got the chat room up, so if you're listening online, you can join in on that. And I see we already have a caller in the queue, which I'll get to here in just a moment. Boy, oh boy. It sounds like they're just listening. If you want to talk, you have to press the 1 key so that I know that you want to speak. So anyhow, I guess I could go ahead and give the number. The number here is area code 858-683-1326. And again, that's 858-683-1326. And the random political rhetoric generator, which is always kind of a fun thing we do here. Let's see what it says this week. This week it's, when I'm elected, I'll make sure pedophiles and violent video game makers cannot make a mockery of our cherished American values. Always entertaining to see what that thing generates. That actually sounds like something somebody would say. So we have the caller in the queue wants to speak, and so I'm going to bring him on now. Caller, you're on the air.
Okay, Ken, this is Don. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine, Don.
Okay. First news is that it seems that the potential war on Syria has been called off, and I think that we can give a lot of credit to the libertarians in the Senate and the House who worked together with the anti-war Democrats and showing that Obama, he has no support in this country for a new war. And I mean, I'm not saying that Obama still might pull something, but right now it looks like it's been called off. Would you agree?
It would be very politically foolish for him to do that at this point. I've got a number of stories and polls on that that I was going to bring up later in the show. It would
Wonderful.
Be a foolish move for him to go in at this point.
And that wouldn't stop him, as you know.
Well, only if he wants to have the Democrats completely obliterated in the midterms.
Well, that wouldn't be a bad thing. But next question is that I'm wondering, is Mr. Bevin, how's he doing in the polls right now? Have you heard?
You know, that's a very good – I have not seen any polls at all on this race, and in fact, I've been looking for them. There are polls in a number of other races around the country for 2014 already for Senate races and House races, but nothing at all regarding the McConnell race. Nothing at all.
Ah.
Dead silence. Which tells
okay.
me – now, you know how these polls work, Don. What ends up happening is somebody actually goes out and sponsors these polls. And
yeah.
usually it's the candidate that does it because they – well, often it's the candidate because if they want to see where they stand and if they're really crushing their opponent, they want to put that out there, right? I mean, they want people to know, hey, I'm in the lead. There are a lot of mindless sheep out there that will go, well, this guy's in the lead. I guess I should back this guy who's in the lead. And it is very interesting that no one's put out any polls at all on this race. For a very long time before Bevin jumped in. So I have no idea where the race stands.
One more comment, and that is that there was a poll done by FreedomWorks of people who vote Republican, and they say that about 80% of the people that they polled were, shall we say, fiscally conservative and socially moderate.
Yeah.
And with all the publicity libertarians have been getting in the non-libertarian media, this seems to be very good news indeed. It's difficult for me on Facebook or in person to even find anybody who supports the neocon point of view. And so things are looking good, and I'm just wondering whether you've had other straws in the wind that you might want to report on.
Well, I mean, I can tell you that you're absolutely correct, that there's definitely been a very libertarian swing to the country in general right now. You know, we've done a lot of outreach activities within the Libertarian Party for the last month and a half or so, and we just finished one up last weekend, and I'm hoping that we can sneak one more in this year. We'll see if that's in the cards or not. But
okay.
In general, the entire country is making this swing, and I can tell you that because I've done these outreach events before. I've done them in the past. Instead of getting the you know, who are you guys? And I don't know if I'm on board with that. And the real, you know, not very non-committal, not aware type response. We're getting a lot of people who just stop by to say, keep up the good work. We get a lot of people who stop by to say, hey, I want to get involved. We have a lot of people. Right now, it is very, very clear to me that the country has taken a libertarian swing. And this is a good thing. I mean, this is not a bad thing at all. That whether it's the libertarian right, which obviously has kind of been rising over the past few years, and many see Rand Paul as the head of that, there's now a rise of the libertarian left. And that's not getting a whole lot of media right now, other than one article out of Politico. But I'm telling you that it's starting to rise over there, too. And we ran into people at events that we've been running who said, hey, I voted for Obama because of civil liberties issues. You know, I was dead set against what Bush was doing. And in their words, not mine, their words, what we ended up with was another Bush, the worst.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, you're absolutely correct. So we're seeing both on the right and on the left a move towards libertarianism. And that's a very good thing. I think it's good for our movement and the efforts that we put in, but also just in general, it's good for the country. I mean, liberty is what we're supposed to be about.
Right. I've been talking to some of the friends I have in left-wing chat rooms that they have to get somebody to oppose Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden who will right now take a stand against Obama and his drive towards war, the NSA collecting data on everybody, putting whistleblowers in jail and things like that. And they agree, they just don't know how to do it yet.
The key thing for those people, they've got to identify who they've got, right? I mean, I'm just talking from a purely political standpoint.
Right.
You need to figure out what your goals are. Look around at all your elected officials that are out there. Find out who is actually a decent candidate who aligns with those principles, and then lobby the heck out of them to run.
Well, I think the only person they can get right now is Dennis Kucinich, because he has his credentials, but he's not running for anything. So
no,
they can't put that much pressure on.
Yeah, and I don't think, I don't know, I don't mean to disparage Dennis Kucinich. I think he's done good things, but I don't think he's the candidate you're looking for. It's going to have to be someone that's a little more outspoken, that has more of a presence. I mean, you're talking about the presidency, right? So it's got to be somebody who, when they walk into a room, commands control of the room. And that's the type of attitude or mindset that person is going to have. And Dennis Kucinich doesn't have that. And that's fine. But I do believe that they're going to have to find somebody, and they should definitely be looking right now and trying to find that somebody if they want to have a chance to get that person into the debate. And I think that having that in the debate on the left, you know, on the Democratic side, would be a good thing. I think that would definitely help raise the awareness that, you know, the establishment of both sides is not doing us any service or any, I don't know what to say, I can't think of the right word.
You want to do you want to talk about the guy who has decided he wants to run for Senate on the Libertarian Party ticket? Maybe you've talked about him on other shows, but a question is going to come up in people's minds that if Bevin gets the Republican nod, will this person be running anyway?
Probably so. I mean, you know, Don, and I've talked about this on the show, and we've had David on here, in fact.
Okay.
You know, the key thing is our voters aren't stupid. They know what's going on. I mean, you know, if you're a libertarian voter at this point, you've been paying attention, right? And so I never worry about this whole vote splitting thing that everybody worries about, because I can go back and I can show you races where it's very clear that it didn't matter. And so I never put a whole lot into that. The chances of, you know, some sort of vote split occurring are very, very slim anyway. The reality is, given that it's Kentucky, I don't think any Democrat who runs for the Senate seat really has a chance. I think, honestly, their best chance is if Mitch McConnell makes it through the primary. So, because Mitch is so disliked by a lot of the folks on the right and the grassroots Republicans, that may open up a window that the Democrats could get into office. But I think if you've got a fresh new face on the Republican side, I think it's game over for the Democrats right then and there.
I agree. Okay, great show.
Hey, thanks, Don. Take care.
Okay.
All right. So, folks, getting back to it here, we've got one of the other things I wanted to talk about, kind of a silly thing, something called the Balmer Peak. And what this is, it was developed, or just, it was a term coined back in the 80s at Microsoft by Steve Ballmer, talking about how alcohol consumption and its effect on creativity. And there was an interesting article on XKCD, which is an online web comic, where they draw up silly things and whatever, and they kind of did the graphical representation of the Balmer Peak on blood alcohol content versus programming skill. And but they actually did do a study on it and found that, interestingly, the Balmer Peak is actually real. The Balmer Peak absolutely is true. And it's just, you know, not necessarily a surprise. Altered states can lead to alternate lines of thinking. And so it's just kind of a funny thing that somebody has done the study on it now using alcohol and showing that it's absolutely real. All right. Going around the internet, and I've been getting a lot of questions about this here in the last 2 days, there is a hoax going around the internet, absolute hoax, claiming that there will be government-mandated RFID chips in firearms, and that supposedly the program is going to be a pilot program in Clark County, Kentucky, which is, by the way, just east of Lexington if you're not from that area, and claiming that it would be GPS tracking, RFID, which, by the way, RFID doesn't do GPS tracking, but that's okay. The point is it's a hoax, and it's not real. They're claiming the Senate just, according to the article that this is all kind of spawned off of, it claims that the Kentucky Senate passed a law like a week or two ago. Our Senate hasn't been in session since April. Yeah, we had the special session, but that was at the beginning of August, and that was only for 1 week. So our Senate isn't in session. They could not have passed this bill because they're not in session. So that's flaw number one. Number two, do you really think something having to do with firearms, and specifically tracking firearms, would really go unnoticed or unreported? Well, I guess maybe I shouldn't be so quick to say this, but unreported by the media? I don't think that that would be the case at all. And it's not real, folks. And the problem is that we now have these quote-unquote news sites that are not news sites at all. They're supposed to be sarcastic. They're supposed to be, stupid. And there's a history of these websites, right? I mean, The Onion is probably the most popular parody news site out there. The difference, though, is that The Onion does things in a way that's irreverent and silly, right? I mean, it's very obvious that when The Onion reports on something, what it is that they're talking about, right? That makes it very, very easy and to know that it's a fake story, right? My favorite article from The Onion of all time, for example, was the news story that the headline was ACLU defends neo-Nazi right to burn down ACLU headquarters. Obviously a fake story, right? And it's silly, and it's funny, and it makes a point. And that's what The Onion does. They don't always make a point, even. It's sometimes just silly. But some of these news sites that are out there are not doing the same thing. Some of these new sites out there are putting out what look like legitimate news stories and doing it in a very serious way and get people all riled up over this stuff. And so I saw somebody earlier refer to them, and I think that's the term we should use them, is troll sites. They're just set up to troll people. And if you don't know what the term troll means, it basically – the idea behind it is you go into a environment, a chat room, or whatever, right, and say something inflammatory just to get people riled up. Those are trolls. And you'll often hear the term, don't feed the trolls, which means don't even pay attention to these people. These people have a sickness, and their goal is to get attention. And don't give this kind of RFID stuff or any of these stupid news sites any credibility. Don't give them any feedback. But it does go to a good point. You should never, ever, ever blindly trust what you read on the internet. Know your source. Know your news source. And there are good news sources on the internet, places that are good and reliable. And then there are the places that aren't so reliable. And then there are the places like this, that I'm not going to say their name, that are just a troll site. So, no, there is not an RFID tracking bill that somehow RFID will track you by GPS, which, by the way, those are two different technologies. That's not how that works. but it's not happening, and it's not real. So let's just put an end to that. Saw an interesting article this week about requiring police officers to wear cameras on their selves. And essentially, what this does, and it's actually a pretty nifty little gadget. I'm looking at getting one just for myself anyway. It's a nifty little gadget. Now, what it does is it simply, what am I trying to say? It has a, it's a little camera where the policeman wears on the front of their chest, and when they're involved in an incident, they can actually hit the record button. It has a 30-second pre-buffer. In other words, from the point, it's continuously recording some video, and when they hit the button, it saves the last 30 seconds prior to the button being hit, and then whatever else forward. And it has means to upload and all this kind of stuff, and it has ways to upload to cop websites or whatever. I don't quite understand what they're talking about there. I assume it's some sort of service that are set up for police agencies to upload videos. But it has a one-touch type thing and whatever. But that's all kind of cool and all. But what's more interesting about that, more than anything, is the side effect that it's having. The side effect on the wearable cameras is that police are using less force. The complaints of excessive force have decreased by 60%. 60% decrease in complaints of excessive force. Now, that could be in part because when the person makes the complaint, they're shown the video or whatever, or they know that there's a video, right? So that might be part of it. But I hearken back to a friend of mine who has often said that when people are watching or you know people could be watching, it changes your behavior. And make no mistake, some of the police officers out there are not police officers for the right reason. And I believe we've talked about that on the show before, that there are cops that are out there who are real public servants and who are doing it for the right reasons. And then there are other cops out there who are cops because they get a badge and a gun and get to order people around. By the way, those people have a screw loose. Just almost as bad or different bad than the people who go around writing troll news. But the point is that it does change what people are doing, right? Because now there's video of what's happened. And these cameras are not that expensive. I think they're $239 a piece. I looked into it, actually, because I myself have wished at times that I had a video recording device to be able to go back and keep 30 seconds of what happened prior and, you know, whatever. And these little things actually apparently do a pretty good job, have like a 12-hour battery. I mean, it's not bad. And I think that as technology has progressed, we have seen that having video can be a great defense if your rights are being abused by the government or law enforcement. They can be a great defense if you're involved in an altercation that would otherwise be a he said, she said situation. Video is very, very good for individuals. And when used in that way, it's very, very good. Now, obviously, all technologies have a downside, and the government's trying to track all of us with video. And make no mistake, I've talked to, I don't want to say anybody in particular because I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but I've talked to people that are in the know, let's say, and there are many police agencies around the country that want to put video cameras on every stoplight, every lamppost, everything, so that they can track behavior. And they'll tell you, even in good intentions, well, that'll make it so we can track the drug dealers. That'll make it so we can, you know, track people who are running from the cops or just committed a robbery or whatever. The problem is once that door is open, without specific legal protections against being monitored innocently, like we've seen with the NSA, for instance, everybody gets monitored. Everybody's a suspect. We had the story, I believe that was last week, where the NSA, they've proven that people working in the NSA were abusing the NSA system to track down friends, ex-lovers, whatever. And that's against NSA guidelines. Ooh, well, they got fired. Whoopity-doo-dah. Or they got, you know, punished. Whoopity-doo-dah. I mean, that's a big deal to have your rights invaded like that. So it's different. Because, and in Kentucky, for instance, we're a one-party state, is what they call it, which means that as long as one party knows that they're being recorded, then it's okay for the recording to occur. Basically, it's an anti-eavesdropping thing, right? So if two people are having a private conversation, I can't set up a boom mic and interfere with their, or not interfere, but intercept their conversation. Likewise, I can't set up a wiretap, right? And then when you want to go around that kind of stuff, there's a legal process there. There's warrants and all that stuff, where there used to be. But the problem is that a lot of this goes around that setup, right? There's no warrants involved if they're just following some guy on all the traffic cameras. There's no warrants involved when the NSA is just monitoring everybody. And I have a very big problem with that. But when it comes to individuals carrying a video camera, I actually think that's a good thing. I think that we as individuals should be able to monitor or to have video recording of what happened. It protects us. It protects everybody. And so we have that piece. And then obviously having the police wear a camera, clearly, there's a benefit right here. It shows 60% decrease in the number of complaints about excessive use of force. You know, being on camera does change people's behavior. And so I have no problem with requiring police officers to wear cameras on them at all times so that in the case of an incident, there is video proof of what occurred. Speaking of snooping, turns out that the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, has been secretly snooping on even more Americans than the NSA has. And this is an article over at Reason. Essentially, the DEA has been spying on everyone. It goes back at least 26 years. Obviously, they've worked their way through all the different other legislation that has allowed even further monitoring and looser standards, right? And that's what a lot of this is. Make no mistake, you know, the NSA and all these folks, they've been monitoring for years. But what we've had is things like Patriot Act that allowed the monitoring to expand in scope and allowed the monitoring to go with less oversight. And that's what we see now, right? And so I guess the point is, again, the difference here between wearing a camera where, hey, I see a police officer, you know, I'm being watched by a police officer versus I'm doing whatever, right, engaging in a conversation over the telephone. There's just a different expectation of privacy there. You know, when I'm in my home, I expect different privacy than when I'm out on the street. And even when I'm out on the street, though, I don't think I'm being recorded at all times by the police, or I shouldn't. I guess maybe that's a faulty thing to think these days, but I would like to think that I'm not being recorded by law enforcement at all times to have my particular individual actions judged and graded in the aggregate to determine whether or not I warrant further surveillance. I mean, this is crazy. Absolutely crazy. But the point is, and this is my point, it's not just the NSA that's monitoring us. There are multiple government agencies monitoring us. Just like there's been an increase in the number of agencies that now have an armed police force. The EPA has an armed police force now, which I find absolutely hilarious because the EPA's job typically has been to sue people. So now the EPA is functioning kind of like a police force that also has the ability to sue, not just arrest. It's a different, I don't know, I don't even know how to explain it. It's just wrong. Just like all this monitoring of innocent people and, you know, trying to add up in the aggregate whether or not they're a bad enough person to warrant monitoring, it's just wrong. It feels wrong. I hope it feels wrong to you, too. I mean, maybe it's just me, but it really, really just feels wrong. In my gut, I know it's wrong. We're at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, we've got Syria on tap. We've got the economy and library and taxes. Boy, got a lot to cover and only about 30 minutes left. Folks, we'll be back here in a few minutes. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Hang tight. We'll be right back.
So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. And getting right back to it, because we've got about 25 minutes left and a lot to cover. If you want to call in, by the way, it's area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. Getting to it here, Don, when he called in at the top of the show, talked about Syria. And I have a few studies here that are showing that opposition to Syria is opposition to American intervention in Syria, I should say, is rising. And we're now sitting at about 68% opposed getting into Syria. And this is a very good thing. I think that we've been kind of on the forefront of this. But some of the other numbers that are important, right? Only 28% favor going into Syria. And only 16% of those strongly favor going into Syria. But at the same time, 45% strongly oppose. So almost double the number of people who even favor going in at all, almost double that number strongly oppose it, which is, I mean, that's a huge statistic. And it would be very, very foolish for Congress and for Obama to vote to go in or decide to go in. Some of the other things that are very interesting here, the percentage of people who agree with these statements, that U.S. airstrikes in Syria are likely to make things worse in the Middle East, 75% agree with that. That there are no good options for how the U.S. deals with Syria, 61%. That the U.S. must act to show that the use of chemical weapons is unacceptable. Now, that does say 60%, so we should do something, but we shouldn't go in, is what we're hearing here. Let's see. The situation in Syria is a threat to the security of the United States. 50% disagree with that. And as far as if the U.S. would lose credibility if we do not act, 56% of people disagree with that statement. In other words, the overwhelming majority say we lose no credibility if we do nothing. So this is kind of a big deal, and it's from two different polls, right? Pew Research did a poll, and Gallup did a poll, and I'm sorry, I said 68 before. I meant to say 63%. So 63% solidly against, two different polls last two weekends. It looks like we've kind of leveled out here now at 63% opposed and only about 28% in favor. And I think that's where it's going to stay. I think that trying to turn that around is a political impossibility at this point. I mean, maybe not, but it's going to take some serious pushing to move the American public back to being in support of doing anything in Syria, at least related to bombing. So one of the things I've been trying to get to for the past few weeks is talking about how our economy hasn't gotten better. And it hasn't. Our economy is not better. They've claimed that the recession is over, and they've been claiming that since 2009. But the reality is that the recession isn't over, that we're basically no better than we were in 2009. Now, some people will point to the stock market and say, well, look, you know, the stock market recovered. Well, the problem is that the stock market, in part, is based on the value of a dollar. And in case you haven't felt it, I know I have, your dollar isn't going as far as it did 4 or 5 years ago. Groceries are more expensive. Gas is definitely hanging out at about that $3.75 a gallon mark, and it's been hanging there for a few years. It's not getting better. And anybody who is honest about it and hasn't been biased in some way, you ask the average person on the street, and they'll tell you things aren't better. The American people, this is another poll from Pew Research, 5 years after market crash, the U.S. economy is seen as no more secure. So when they ask people, are you more secure, no more secure, or don't know about your financial situation now 5 years out from the crash, 63% of Americans say they're no more secure than they were 5 years ago. Another way to say that is 63% of people say they're not better off than they were 5 years ago. Now, that's a big deal. It's a very big deal. And I've talked to various politicos about this, that in a prolonged recession, when the people in office are not seen as part of the solution, anything can happen in a political race. Anything can happen. You know, the idea that Mark Bevin could have a legitimate chance challenging Mitch McConnell would have been laughable 6 years ago. But we've been in a recession for 5 years. Mitch McConnell has taken a good bit of criticism over that time. Most of it, if not all of it, rightfully so. He was the one that voted and cheerleaded for the TARP bailouts, which were horrible. And everybody you ask says, hey, should we have bailed out the banks? No. You have a small percentage that, oh, yeah, well, you know, we needed to do it in order to stop a bank crash. Yeah, whatever. You don't know. You can't prove a negative anyway. And even if those big banks had crashed, the little guys would have survived and the little guys would have benefited. So the point is, we're not better off. Another story that ran in USA Today about the 5% recovery. Those in the top 5% income bracket, the recovery has been okay. It's been pretty good. But the other 95% of Americans, not really. They haven't seen a turnaround. Their wealth, their overall net worth, their net wealth, is decreasing or staying stagnant, is not recovering. It's things are not better. People know they're not better. Anybody who isn't tied to some political philosophy or tied to some position knows that things aren't better. So I'm looking here at a chart of U6. U6 is overall unemployment. U5 is not overall. There's a few things exempted. But here's the point. Officially, unemployment in the United States is at 7.3% as of August. But U6, which is the real unemployment number, is at 13.7%. Now, make no mistake, right before the crash, before everything got horrible, U6, true unemployment, was at 8%. And now the government's bogus numbers are at 7.3, where they exclude half the people who are unemployed. It's 7.3. The real number shift here, the real unemployment, is 13.7%, up from 8%, and it has not recovered. Yeah, there's been some. I mean, the highest was 17.4% at U6. So, I mean, it's not as bad as it was at the peak, certainly. And that was October 2009 was the peak. But people are not happy, and rightfully so. People are still feeling a pinch, not surprisingly so. Inflation has been out of control, absolutely out of control. Got a chart here that shows the consumer price index from January 1939 going forward. And if you look at, let's go from January 2009 here, if I can. It's kind of hard to use this. There you go. Well, whatever. All right. February 2009, the consumer price index as weighted against January 1939, well, it's almost laughable, 1,415%. So, you know, your money went 1/14 as far as it did, or what would that be, 14 times less. I don't even know how to read that. 14, it looks like it's 1/14 of what it used to be. And now we're at, 1,568%. So we're up over 100% of where it used to go. So the point of this chart, even though it's hard to read and hard to understand, is that the consumer price index continues to climb. Goods and services continue to cost more. And we know that. Everybody knows that. Anybody who's been to the grocery store lately knows. Anybody who's been to a restaurant lately, have you been to a restaurant lately? Notice the prices are going up? Yeah, they are. Because the raw cost of those goods is going up. Another chart I have here is total public debt as a percentage of gross domestic product. And starting in 2008-2009, the percent of debt, the GDP to debt ratio was about 60%. Right, I may have said that backwards. Debt to GDP was 60%, a little over. Looks like about 63-64%. It is now over 100%. What does that mean? That means we have buried ourselves in debt. That's what it means. And we've buried ourselves in debt because we can't afford the things we used to afford. Right? And to stay afloat, we're borrowing. It's not a long-term solution. And combined with the fact that we keep printing more dollars and we keep digging ourselves further into debt, the cost of goods is going to continue to go up. This has led to calls for, again, a raise in the minimum wage. But the problem is the minimum wage doesn't solve these problems. The minimum wage is a Band-Aid. And there's a big, long philosophical conversation about minimum wage I'm not going to get into tonight. But it's not solving the problem. The problem is that we're spending like it's going out of style, and we're printing money like we're some sort of drunken counterfeiters. And, of course, there's going to be economic ramifications to that. There of course, are going to be. There has to be. Things aren't getting better. And the only way they're going to get better is if people take an opportunity or if people who are in the liberty movement take the opportunity to explain to people why it is their dollar doesn't go as far as it used to. Why does everything cost more? Why aren't our leaders doing more about this? And we need to be talking to others, and we need to be figuring out what it is that we can do to fix this problem. Now, I have my ideas, of course. You could vote out 95% of the folks in Congress, that would be a good start. But it's not just there. It's not just there. Runaway government, and this is the funniest part, with the continued recession, governments have really started feeling the pinch, and so they're doing crazy things to try to make their budgets fall in line and with their plans. And the problem with that is government entities derive their revenue solely from taxpayers. Now, this leads into our last topic for tonight, the libraries in Kentucky. Library boards are not elected. A list of names is submitted to the Kentucky Department of Libraries and Archives down in Frankfort. KDLA then narrows that list down to three people. Those three people then are sent back to the county, and the local judge executive gets to appoint one of those three people. That's the process that of filling a vacancy on the library board. They, in the library board, want the ability to raise your taxes. These people are not elected. I will reemphasize that. They want to be able to tax without being elected. Or shall we say another way, which is more popularly or well known, they want taxation without representation. The libraries, and make no mistake, there are other entities in the state that are, all of our taxing districts are appointed in weird, goofy, stupid ways. Most of them are not directly elected. Some of them are partially elected, like fire boards, which that's a really weird one. Fire boards are elected some weekend in June. The polls are open at your firehouse for like 3 hours, and only property owners, which by the way is completely illegal, but only property owners can run for or vote in the elections for fire board. But health departments are appointed as well. There's lots of different boards and lots of different ways that they're put in. But in 1978, the state of Kentucky passed House Bill 44. 78 or 79. Now I'm blanking on whether it was 78 or 79. So I'm going to say the late 70s. And they created what is now known as the compensating rate rule. The idea behind this was to ensure that a taxing entity would bring in the same or a little bit more money than they brought in the year before. Regardless of what property values did, they would adjust the tax rate to make it so that the amount of revenue, tax revenue, the entity brought in was the same. So this is a government-centric formula. That's the hard part for people to get over, right? This is government-centric. It's about how many dollars does the government bring into its little entity, right? The little fiefdom there. And so that's the first hurdle you got to get over. Don't think about your taxes. Think about money to the entity. That means that if property values across the county doubled, then in theory, the tax rate would be halved and the same amount of money would come in the year following, or just a little bit more. And there's a little bit of math errors and math fudging and all this, and it always, of course, fudges in favor of the taxing entity. But you're talking about hundredths of a percent, so it's not that big of a deal, right? You're talking maybe $50,000 in $1 million budget or $2 million budget. It's not a huge deal there. But the compensating rate rule is very complex, and it's not worded very well, and unfortunately it's being abused. So there's a problem with compensating rate as it is. And that's issue number one, is that in one case, for instance, there's a board downstate, a special taxing district, that is claiming they're taking compensating rate, which in theory should mean maybe they get an extra 10 grand or whatever because of the rounding errors, but stay the same. But no, they're somehow they're abusing the rule to make it so they're getting a 7% increase. 7% increase in revenue. Well, where does that revenue come from? That revenue comes from the public. And in theory, it's going to be spread out across everybody. So in theory, there's going to be, and in fact, it is just about a 7% increase in the tax rate. Joe. They are raising your taxes but claiming they're not. And I have a big problem with that because that's a lie. It's a big fat lie. So that's part of the problem. Now, with the libraries in particular, there's a lawsuit going on around the state. If you haven't been up on this issue, up here in Northern Kentucky is where they started. And essentially, there are a total of 80 library districts that were formed by petition prior to 1984. And this lawsuit that was filed up here basically calls into question Kentucky Revised Statute number 173.790. And essentially what that does, it says that if a library board formed before 1984 wants to raise their taxes, they must use petitioning if they were formed by petition. If they were formed by citizen ballot, then they must raise their taxes at the ballot. Somewhere along the way, between 1978 and today, the libraries started using the other way, the compensating rate way of raising taxes, rather than petition. And the problem there, it's kind of hard to explain the big long story on how they got here. We had a forum up here in Northern Kentucky on Wednesday night about all this, and there was a 7-minute part of it that explained how we got here. But essentially, there were activists and citizens of the county that went to the library board because the library board wanted to create a fourth branch that in the end, based on the numbers and everything else, was not necessary. And you could argue about whether or not it was necessary, but the issue was actually put onto the ballot, even though that wasn't legal. It was put onto the ballot, and it lost 62-38. So the public has decided that they don't want this branch. But the library had already made certain commitments before even putting it on the ballot. For instance, they purchased land, about 4.5 acres of land, for $1 million. When all of the surrounding land went for about $25,000 an acre, they spent $220,000 an acre. Insane. Absolutely insane. Even if they sold that property, they wouldn't be able to get that money back out of it. This led people to complain and say, we don't like what you're doing. And essentially, the library board told people to go pound sand, that they could do what they wanted, and they were going to do what they wanted. And so they, these activists and these folks, and some were in the Tea Party, and that's the way you'll hear it reported, Tea Party versus the library. It's beyond the Tea Party. Unless 62% of Campbell County's Tea Party, in which case all the elected officials in the establishment better watch out. But the point is, the citizens in the county got involved, said we don't want this library. They were going to incur a huge amount of debt. And in that, there was a law that prevented taxing entities from doing that, but there's a loophole, and that's what the library was going to use, is the loophole. So the activists then went to the library board and said, you can't do this because of this law, this 173.790. And they said, no, that doesn't apply to us. And they said, no, we're pretty sure that it does. And they just said, nope, doesn't apply, even though it spells out exactly that it does. And they also then went to the county fiscal court, because the county fiscal court does have somewhat a questionable ability to veto a tax increase from other taxing entities in the county, although that's questionable as to whether or not that would work. And the fiscal court said, no, we're not getting involved. And so a lawsuit ensued. And now, you know, the media is out there saying, oh, it's the Tea Party versus the libraries. The Tea Parties are against the libraries. And nothing is further from the truth. And thankfully, at the forum, it came out that that's exactly the case. The Tea Parties are not against the libraries. And in fact, the community is not against the libraries. However, what people are against are taxing entities that are not responsible to the public. There is no accountability. Who tells the taxing district no? Who has the authority to do that? If they're able to be appointed from Frankfurt and raise your taxes without question and have no means to stop or to stop them, doesn't that mean they're unaccountable? Of course it does. And so that's what people are really upset about, is accountability. you know, there's a lot of other side issues in this. The libraries around the country are suffering cutbacks because in most places, libraries are controlled by the city or are controlled by a county. And in fact, here in Kentucky, I believe that the Louisville Library and I think the Lexington Library are controlled by those cities, respectively, because they are city libraries, not a county library taxing district. And so libraries around the country are suffering massive cutbacks because as cities feel the crunch of this recession, and believe me, they just started feeling this crunch in 2011. As they have started to feel the crunch, they've pulled money out of the libraries to do crazy things like pave the streets. What? Yeah, so the point is that the libraries are pushed down on the priority list on top of the fact that technology is changing. And you talk to anybody who's under 18 today, any teenager, and say, do you want to go to the library or do you want to just download the book on your Kindle or whatever, your e-reader, your tablet, whatever, they're going to say, let's get on my tablet. That's the problem the library faces. And so they're trying to protect their turf and they're trying to protect their reason for existence. But they're doing so in a way that is not taking public input. And that's a huge problem. There should be no taxation without representation, ever. And there are common sense ways to fix this, but it's going to require Frankfurt to act. Frankfurt needs to modify the laws. And honestly, I wish they would standardize it across the board with all the issues-based petitioning. Some only take 1,000 signatures. Some take 51% of the number of people that voted in the last election. Huge disparity. How about we just put it at 10% of the people who voted in the last election and call it that and call it done? Wow, we're out of time. Folks, thank you for tuning in. If you tune in via podcast, tune in live next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Thank you for being here. This has been another edition of Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Have a good week.